Oh no. No way. No.
Mandzukic as well.
Lads, let's be honest.
It's been a lovely one.
Nothing less than we deserve. We've bottled it. We've been in this game. And not at one point did I think we were getting through here. Not at one point. So it didn't even, I didn't even feel anything.
But first 10 minutes.
What they deserve, man. Gareth, what was that half-time team talk like?
Cameraman's
what was that half-time
f***ing flat.
He has, actually. England are on the way to going out of the World Cup.
Hello and welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller. I am here with a sad Tottenham fan, Dr. Pete, also of English fame, and a kind of neutral James Lewis of Manchester City fandom. James?
I was actively rooting against England.
Wish you'd be more patriotic.
Right. That's not right.
What?
That doesn't make sense. All right, so we're going to start this one off here. I mean, we've been saying it every single episode, but basically this is the greatest World Cup ever, guys. Are we still there? Are we still on that level? Because you really have to check every single level, and I think so.
Yeah, I think we're still there as long as France doesn't blow Croatia to bits in the finals. And
that's exactly what I was thinking.
We get a little bit of fun. And maybe, Thomas, a golden boot race in the third place game. Chances that Lukaku or Harry Kane pass the ball to anybody in that game.
0%.
I think the third place games usually, I think the over under on goals goes up by one.
It's like watching those World 11 versus celebrity matches.
Yeah,
where
like
they
four
have like
to four.
Gordon Ramsay's playing attacking mid.
Yeah, we'll get to the third place game, guys. We'll get to the third place game. We'll break it down. But we are going to start today with sad news. As Croatia 2, England 1 in extra time. The hype around this one, how did you guys feel about the tagline going around England? Football is coming home.
I mean, it's funny because every time England goes into a World Cup, the media does everything they can to like break them down, and nothing they do is going to be good enough. And there's all these stories coming out and creating disharmony, all that kind of stuff. And then as soon as they win a couple games, oh my God, we're going to win the World Cup. Here it comes. Coming home. It's coming home. Doesn't matter who we play. Croatia, who are they? They've got one player, Luka Modric, and nobody else. So we're going to win, and we're going to the final. They thought they were in the final already, and they paid for it. Disrespectful.
I don't think that's true at all. I think that they came to play against a very good Croatia team. I thought it was a back-and-forth game. I think they had, you know, one eye on the final. I think their country was just really excited that they had a team that they could actually get behind. And that saying has been around forever because they never win anything. So it's not like, you know, they were just all of a sudden spouting it. But
that's way too reasonable of an opinion.
I thought that they, you know, they were good in this game and Croatia was just better than them. I think at the end of the day, it came down to who had the more experienced players in the moment, and I think that was Croatia, and that's what ended up sending him through.
Yeah, I think a lot of what sent Croatia through had to do with legs, and we'll get into that in terms of fatigue. I mean, I also think that as it goes by the tagline, it didn't really bother me either way, but I saw a lot of friends and pundits more importantly, I guess, although my friends are very, very important, guys.
And pundits who are friends. We're very...
Plenty of them, well, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. but I saw a lot of them, especially for like Brazil, Argentina fans of those countries, Spain especially, a lot of Spanish fans were extremely put off by the tagline. And a lot of them, I saw like a lot of people talking like, it's a world's game, it's a global game. Like they were really insulted by the idea that the English were claiming football. I guess, James, you kind of already made your point with that, but is there anything else you want to say about whether or not you think that it was arrogant or anything along those lines?
Well, I guess, you know, Pete's kind of right in that it wasn't the players actually saying any of that. It's the media, and they're going to say all that kind of stuff. But I do think that that is an idea that the entire nation gets behind, whether or not it's been said ironically before. I think that everyone starts out saying it ironically, and then they start psyching themselves into believing it. But that being said, I think this was England's chance to get to a final.
It definitely was, and I feel like a lot of people are also saying, well, England didn't beat anybody in regulation, I went back and forth with somebody on Twitter about this. It's like, England didn't beat any teams in regulation, blah, blah, blah. That is a completely irrelevant argument in tournament play. 1,000% irrelevant. It doesn't matter at all. All that matters is that you move forward and beat the teams you're supposed to beat, especially for a team like England that traditionally loses to teams they're supposed to beat and doesn't make it out of the group. So for them to do the job that they are expected to do, to win the Colombia game, to win the Sweden game, it's absolutely a win for them. And furthermore, even if that wasn't their goal, you think that Spain and Germany and Argentina wouldn't have liked to win by penalty kicks against Colombia in the first round, the first knockout round? Like, you had a job to do, you did it, you get credit for it. You can't run somebody down for having a successful tournament just doing their job.
Isn't the counterpoint to that too, like, Croatia, the last three games have all gone to extra time, with two of those three going to PKs, so it's not like they're crushing people in regulation either.
Yeah, it's really the dumbest argument that I've ever heard. Because in 10 years, it really is. In 10 years.
And you're fresh out of an argument with me.
Yeah, that's very true.
That was only the second dumbest argument I've heard today. But no one's going to remember in 10 years. I mean, it took me 2 years to forget that Portugal didn't win any games in regular time to win the Euro 2 years ago. So, true. And no one in Croatia is going to care at all if they win the World Cup, you know, that they won three in extra time. I mean, that's ridiculous.
If anything, it shows more resolve, right?
Yeah.
Like, playing that many minutes in the amount of time that they did. For sure, I just wanted to bring that to your attention because it infuriated me today on Twitter when I was going back and forth with this person. They're a big Spain fan, and they're big believers that football should be beautiful above all else and all this other stuff. And I was just kind of like, no, you play to win the game.
They want it to be played the City way.
No, City adopted their way. Pep changed his way, and he has a cold-blooded side to his beautiful football, which is what makes it so impressive.
I was just like talking to you.
Oh, well.
Did you ask him how... did you ask him how Spain's doing right now?
I think that was the problem. He was on tilt, and he was really upset that England was claiming football, you know, saying football's coming home. He's like, they didn't beat anybody, blah, blah. Doesn't matter. They made it to the semis. And if they finish in third, which nobody really cares about, honestly, finishing third or fourth. But I think England will care about it. In general, when I say nobody cares about it, I mean nobody remembers it. But the nations that finish third remember it. You know,
yeah.
They do.
It's not really important to anybody else. It's like finishing like fourth, fifth, or sixth in the Ballon d'Or voting.
Yeah, I mean, we had that argument today. We'll get into that in a little bit. Let's get into the match now. We've had enough time talking about the build-up to it. In this one, you know, England named an unchanged team. You had Maguire, Stones, Walker across the back, Pickford in goal. Pickford's been excellent. Henderson at the DM spot. We were worried about that because it was Henderson versus Modric, and I thought Henderson did all right in this one. But Lingard and Dele Alli were kind of roaming attacking center midfielders, with Young and Trippier out wide, Kane and Sterling up tops, both of those players in more of a free roll. Kane dropped a little deeper as the game went on. And, I mean, Croatia, Modric in a more attacking role in this one. How do you guys think Modric versus Henderson went in the first half?
I mean, I thought Henderson did fine in the first half. I mean, you can only limit Luka Modric so much out there, and I thought he did a bang-up job, at least in the first half. I think Modric got more effective as the game wore on, which I know you're going to talk about that a little more, but it was amazing to me that even though Croatia has played more minutes and they're an older team, you'd think they would run out of gas, but they just got stronger as the game went on, even in extra time. I mean, I have no idea where their energy came from after that goal. It was incredible.
I've been wary of England's midfield and how it was going to be coming up against a strong midfield this whole time, because it's leaving Henderson really exposed. But like Pete said, in the first half, they did okay. But I think they were never, with that midfield setup, they were never going to be in a position to take control of the game. And I don't think we ever saw England really in control at any point. And as Croatia grew into the game, I mean, they were just able to exploit that a lot more. I mean, if your midfield partners are Ali and Lingard, you can't expect them to be doing much defensive work. I mean, they're just not.
Yeah.
They're those types of players. Not any kind of commentary on them, but that, to me, it's like a very, very attacking setup. And you can't say that's disrespectful to line up that way against Croatia, but I think it's not. fully thought out. Why not shuffle it a little bit, especially because teams are going to be able to game plan if they know Henderson's going to be the only one really doing work in the midfield. Put Dyer in there too and free up one of Ali or Lingard, whoever you prefer, to be that kind of link, which I think that they were missing for a lot of the tournament, and that's why Harry Kane probably had to drop deeper than usual.
Yeah, I thought Lingard and Dele Alli were pretty ineffective in this one. I think Lingard popped up and had a couple decent opportunities that he really didn't put on frame. He was the more bright of the two, but neither one of them really stuck out to me, and I think that's more of a testament to Modric, Rakitic, and Brozovic from the Croatian midfield kind of nullifying them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to say that Croatia has probably been the best cohesive team in the tournament. Would you guys agree with that, Pete?
Certainly up there. France has been pretty incredible too.
They've been a little disjointed, France has. They're just incredibly talented. I don't think they've been as cohesive as Croatia.
I would disagree in this last game that we saw them against Belgium. I thought that they were incredibly disciplined in defense and went in with a strong game plan and stuck to it. I think they really turned up.
Yeah, but that was for one match where we said that they turned up. But for the four before that, I mean, the first four matches they played in, they seemed to be stalling a little bit and just barely scraping through. And I think whereas Croatia has been on point as a unit for the entire tournament, that's the point I'm trying to make. And I think that's actually the difference in this one, is that Croatia played better as a unit. Pete had mentioned the experience. I think that was a big deal too. You know, most of the English squad, this is their first World Cup, or really their first valuable minutes in a World Cup. They played in the Euro, etc., but these are more valuable minutes than that. They're all around 23, 24, it seems, except for Young. And I think that it kind of showed as the game went on. You know, Harry Kane missing an early opportunity was a big deal.
Oh, that was a bad one.
It was. I was looking at the angle again. It's a really tight angle where he hit the post. But that would have been to take them up to 2-0, not to go past the first goal, guys. 5 minutes in, Kieran Trippier, Dr. Pete, after this free kick got bent in over the wall from about 25 yards out, you were wondering how he doesn't take the free kicks for Tottenham.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, Eriksen has delivered some incredible free kicks, but I think Trippier might give him a run for his money. And when it wasn't just this free kick, you know, throughout the whole tournament, he's been bending in corner kicks, dead balls, and
crosses. His crosses have been amazing.
And he's been like that the last half of the season for Tottenham. He's been bending in those balls, and more often than not, Harry Kane or somebody else ends up on the other end of him. It was really exciting to watch him sort of grow as this tournament moved on. And I think he was, in, you know, my opinion, he was probably England's best player overall.
Yeah, I think so too. Pickford's right there.
Yeah, Pickford, that's true. Pickford might have been better, but he was right up there.
Yeah, big goal here in the 5th minute. Just exactly what England needed, honestly. And I thought that they played a really good first half for the most part. They didn't dominate per se, but they were right there. They're right on the edge. And, you know, if Harry Kane puts that tight ball away, everybody talks about the second shot. I actually think the first shot is more important, where, who was it? Was it Dele Alli who poked him through? But he had a decent angle running at the keeper. And the keeper shut the angle down really quickly, which I thought was, you know, the way to go. Subasic has had an excellent tournament anyways. Shuts the first shot down, Harry Kane gets a second shot, but it's practically from the byline, and he hits the post with it. I mean, James, on one hand, you'd say that it was a very tough angle. On the other hand, you would say that he's the best number 9 in the world, and that has to be a goal, right?
Yeah, it's a tough angle for sure, but, I mean, we're talking about Harry Kane, who people want to put into discussion for top players out there right now, and rightly so. You need him to put that in. I think he should, and I think it's not wrong to expect him to have done better with that opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. And unfortunately, as good as Harry Kane is, this is one of a number of games, including semifinals and finals, that he just has kind of disappeared in. The Juventus Champions League game, the FA Cup semifinal against Man U, and now this game, he sort of disappeared in this one. So it's a little bit depressing for me to see it again from him. Obviously, he's young and he'll grow from it. But at some point, if you want to be the best player in the world or in the top 3 or 5 players, you've got to show up in games like this and put the ball in the back of the net.
Pete, you made a good point. We were talking earlier too, and you were saying that outside of a couple games, I mean, overall, he might not have actually had that great of a tournament altogether. And looking back, I mean, I think that it was a lot different than seeing him play for Tottenham, because for Tottenham, I mean, he definitely finishes off chances that other people create for him, but he also does a great job creating chances for himself out of nothing. And we really did not see that part of his game in this tournament, I think, at all. Once. I don't remember him really crafting a chance out for himself where he didn't get, you know, assistance from another player.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, I mean, how much credit goes to the Croatian backline, especially Vida and Lovren in this one? It's hard for me to give Lovren credit,
really,
but I think he played pretty well overall. And Vida, you know, this was his best game of the tournament, and he's played very well. And I wonder how much of that had to do with buckling down Harry Kane. I mean, I'm sure that is part of it, but as James mentioned, if you want to talk about a player who's in the top five in the world in a game like this, you just have to do more. And Harry Kane, you know, he didn't score that shot. It hit the post and rolled out, and that's just bad luck or whatever. But he had another opportunity later on a free kick that was bent in where he missed a header.
I mean, he never misses those headers in a regular Premier League game. He never misses that first shot. He never misses that header, so... I mean, he
did seem tired.
Yeah.
He did. I mean, he seemed tired in the last game. He seemed tired in this game. He might have been gassed a little bit and just not firing on all cylinders. I don't know if the tactics really helped him a lot either. Definitely not utilizing him and Dele Alli in the same ways that they were so effective for Tottenham last season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, England goes into the half leading 1-0 and probably happy to do so. They weren't taking a barrage from Croatia, but Croatia was creating chances. We're obligated to talk about Sterling now, and we've gone back and forth over this. The English media is going berserk over Sterling. They have some kind of weird thing with him. I don't know what it is, but whether or not Sterling is going to be the GOAT on this, I don't think there should be a GOAT, and I don't think it should be Sterling. I think he, throughout the tournament, has done a lot more than the statistics show, especially not playing as an overall forward. His finishing has been poor, and that could be partly because of the stage he's on, etc. But the rest of his game has been pretty good overall. In this one, however, didn't really have chances and was almost anonymous. It just seemed like the whole team was dragging a little bit.
Yeah, I think for him it's been, you know, two aspects of his game. One that's been incredible, and that's been his vision, his running into space, dragging defenders, making runs behind. And I think that has been very good this tournament. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And in a few of those games, he looked the most dangerous for a good portion of those games. But the problem is when, and I know he's not playing a striker role, I understand that, but when you have as many chances as he has, and good chances, you cannot come out of a tournament like this without a goal. And I think it's like 25 straight games for England without a goal for an attacking player. I mean, that's poor. His finishing has got to be better. Overall, I'm not of the opinion that he should have been subbed out, or not subbed out, but that Rashford should have started. I completely disagree with that.
Let's be honest. He's not, and this is for City too, he's not the first guy that you want to be on the end of a scoring opportunity, right? I mean,
no.
Even though he scored quite a lot of goals for City, I think he could have scored twice as many if he put away all his chances. I mean, but that's what he brings, is creating chances. And by some statistics, you would look at it and say, okay, he was anonymous. But if you look at statistics like, you know, players, how many players you take on during a match, or how many completed dribbles you have, he's got to be up. I think he's probably leading the English team. I didn't see any other players taking on defenders the way that he does. And then something that you can't really quantify that Pete pointed out was his runs into space and how it frees up everyone else to play that they want to play. And I think it was pretty obvious that when he was subbed off for Rashford, and I don't think it's any commentary on Rashford, but when he was subbed off, I mean, the English attack died, and that's when Croatia just took all of the game.
Yeah, it seemed to be one-dimensional after they made the sub. Like, they were just trying to punch Rashford into space. But they didn't make the sub until after the Croatian goal, which was definitely coming, guys, right? I mean, Croatia was knocking and knocking, and finally a bent ball in. Perisic goes with a nice finish outside of his boot, nice and high, like shoulder high, just basically beating Kyle Walker to the header. Dr. Pete, do you think Kyle Walker has any blame there, or you think it's just a player getting in a better offensive position than a defensive player?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a great attacking player, experienced, knowing he has to attack the ball and get there and getting his foot on it. It was, you know, Walker just hesitated for a split second. I don't think he, you know, realized the pressure that was coming. And, you know, maybe 9 times out of 10, doesn't matter. He heads that ball out. It's not a problem, but when you're facing competition like this with, you know, some of the best players in the world, those are the kind of mistakes that are going to lose the game for you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree there was a little bit of both. In that situation, I mean, Perisic basically does the only thing that could have resulted in a goal. And 9 times out of 10...
Great finish.
Nine times out of 10, it doesn't happen, and Kyle Walker heads the ball away. I mean, if you think about it, too, there's really no other option that Kyle Walker could have taken that would have been a sensible play. I mean, you don't want Kyle Walker trying to bike it out or do a flying kick at it. I mean, he leans in to head the ball out.
But he hesitated, kind of coiled back to sort of almost
get power on it.
Yeah, and I think if he attacked it a little bit, even if he skipped the ball out some,
yeah,
you know, maybe that would have made a difference.
Yeah, it might have. But, I mean, he still takes some blame there, but I don't think it's some disastrous play like what ended up happening later on in the game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there is some blame there, but the blame that I see on Kyle Walker is more like he's played well for most of the tournament. Not outstanding, but he's played well. And I don't think that I would be comfortable starting someone else in that center back spot that would win that header.
No, no.
Does that make sense? Like, I wouldn't put in Cahill or Jones there. You know, like, Kyle Walker deserves to be there. And heading is not his strength, but he's not bad at it. And it just happens that, like you guys said, I mean, Perisic is a world-class player, in my opinion, hidden on Inter. And I think that he made a world-class play. Yeah. And I think that's a huge difference in this game.
Yeah, Walker's a fullback playing center back, and that was a fullback's header.
Yeah, he's no slab.
That's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it. Before the 90 minutes was up, there's a play that not a lot of people are talking about, and I'm surprised by it. But John Stones wins a header on a corner kick. The ball is going in the post, inside the post for a goal, and Dr. Pete headed off the line by a man on the post?
Well, you should qualify that because
I qualified.
When you look back, when the guy first lined up for a corner kick, I said there's nobody on either post, and we've talked about that, and I do not understand it at all. If you put two men on the post, then you're decreasing the size of the goal effectively by about 3 or 4 feet. And so the goalie has much less space to cover basically just the center of the goal. And sure, you can sneak it past those guys sometimes, but it's got to be a pretty good header. And you're not going to get something that just dribbles in off the post like you did in the Russia game.
In a few games in this tournament.
Oh, yeah.
A few games have been goals like that.
Unfortunately, the defender dropped back, and I don't know if that was designed or not, but the defender dropped back. Stones had a nice header that was going to be nestled right in the side of the net, and
yeah, great header.
And not the hardest clearance for the defender. He was just in exactly the right spot.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't start on the post there, but was it designed tactically for him to drop back? Because he was on the line when that header was met. So I don't know if that was met. Was that on intentional or not? But yeah, we've been talking about it. Absolutely have to have people on the post. And I think the idea is, oh, well, we have numbers in the box if you don't have guys on the post. But I mean, if you put your two shortest guys there, it's not like the other team is going to have all their players in the box, right? They had to have somebody back for the counter, so not everybody's attacking the ball anyways. So it's not like you're going down numbers on corner kicks to do that. And exactly like Pete said, you shrink the size of the goal, and maybe most importantly, you can't have one of these little crappy dribblers drop in where the ball just goes past everyone and can just be easily cleared out. So in this case, a little bit of a mix here because there weren't people on the post to start, but it's a huge moment in this match that a lot of people aren't talking about, and I think that it is one of the biggest moments in the match.
That could have been the guy that was supposed to cover Stones in the first place because he was absolutely unmarked, but it worked out for him. I mean, Stones, if that header is a little better from Stones, none of them have a chance of doing anything about it, but it so happened that he did, so worked out.
Yeah, great save there. Rashford comes on for Sterling, and the English attack changes completely, as we said. Basically, they're just launching long balls into space. And honestly, guys, the last 20 minutes or so, like, England looked absolutely cooked. They had just played for too long.
They panicked and they were just hoofing it up the field, and it was ugly. It was ugly.
Rose came on for Young in the 91st minute and added a little bit of spice, and he actually was pretty positive when he came in, but it didn't really seem to make a difference. I thought Croatia, for the most part, dominated extra time. When they scored their goal, it's not like they didn't deserve it. Mandzukic ghosts behind Stones and I guess it was Harry Maguire. They kind of lost him, and he got behind, poke a ball through, and if you give a player like him, a guy who's got that much experience in huge matches, he seems to score in those big matches. And it's difficult for me because on the one hand, drops back and is closest to Stones, but about 1 second previously, he was Harry Maguire's man and behind Harry Maguire. So I think it's just a defensive mix-up. But
you're right. I mean, originally looking at it, it looks like Stones fell asleep. But, I mean, he is just nestled right there in between both of those center backs. And I think Pickford could have been a little bit more alert to the danger as well. But that might be being a little nitpicky. Either way, there was no urgency to really clear that ball out, and they ended up paying for it. I think they were tired. You could tell every single one of those guys was drained, and Mandzukic was just that much more alert.
I mean, to me, it was just a very efficient, ruthless striker. Mandzukic has his head down until the very last second, if you go back and look at it. And I think it was just an example of him taking an opportunity. And Stones switched off for just a second. And you're right, there might have been a little bit of a mix-up. But to me, it was a player who was very gassed, mentally tired, who probably wouldn't have made that mistake, you know, 20 minutes into the match. And I agree with you, there was a little bit of space where if Pickford was alert to it, and because it seems like he's reacted to everything so well in the whole tournament other than that play. So, I mean, it's just a shame to see them lose in that fashion, but you can't say, like Tom said, that it wasn't deserved because Croatia was a better team for the last probably hour almost.
Oh, absolutely. And if Mandzukic isn't alert to that, I mean, it doesn't happen at all. He definitely takes advantage of the opportunity and finishes really well.
Yeah. So Mandzukic does score here, and I mean, it's just a matter of a player being more experienced. The legs were super heavy in this one. I thought that England just looked completely gassed, James, and Vardy comes on for Walker. But at that point, there's just nothing really happening with England. No cohesive play. Really, their only move was to try to get Rashford on the ball and have him try to dribble through people and score. But no Kane, no Dele Alli, really. I mean, they were just too tired.
Yeah, they were just hoofing it upfield and hoping that Kane could win a header and knock it down to somebody, which is totally bypassing a lot of the strength of the players that they did put in midfield, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. That's a good way to put it. Croatia takes this one 2-1. The only thing I want to add to this conversation, James, is that I worry about the next World Cup. I don't want to be negative like this, but
well, the next one's definitely coming home.
No, do what? Not do that.
It's coming home.
It's not going home. England fans, be very happy with the way your team played. They did the job that they needed to do. They made it to the semifinals. They might finish in third place. You might have the golden boot winner. This is a win for the English.
They're gonna pull a Germany in Qatar 2022.
I honestly, like, I really could see that because I believe that the hype is going to be like, oh, we're going to make the final in this one. It's like, no, you go back to the pool that you were at before, which is not a favorite, but not a dark horse kind of thing, where you're sitting at 15-1 odds or whatever, and you're like the eighth most likely team to win the tournament.
Yeah.
That's where they should be. And you just can't show up for the next tournament. Like, well, all these guys are 28 now and they were finishing the semifinals. It's natural to progress to the finals. It's not natural to do that in the World Cup. Be happy with what you got.
What'll happen if they get a group that isn't two dead ringers and a team that you play in your last game and have basically a handshake agreement that you don't care about losing with? I don't know. We'll see.
You got to win the games in front of you, and they did. They get credit for that. But yeah. I'm telling England fans that this team was expected to make it into maybe the quarterfinals, and that would have been a victory, as we said. Getting past the knockout rounds.
Before the tournament, you'd think that, but with how it shook out, I mean, you had a huge players knocked out early. This was their chance to get to the final. looking back, they should be proud of themselves. Absolutely. They made it to the semifinals, and they took it to the wire, but missed opportunity.
It is a missed opportunity. I'm just saying, hold your jets. Don't be thinking that this means that the next step is a final, which is going to happen. I can't talk directly to the English media, but that's what's going to happen in the next World Cup.
This is your platform. Tell them.
Hey, guys, there's a really good chance that you guys don't make it to the final next time. That's me telling them.
It's going home. All right. Oh, Jesus. It's going home.
Croatia 2, England 1. England is knocked out of the World Cup by Croatia. Croatia in their first final ever. Very exciting, James, for them and their fans. And they are going to play France as France beats Belgium 1-0. And I think you had a really good description for this. I was talking about how it didn't have that many events in the game, but you're right. It was an excellent tactical match.
It was very clear what each team was trying to accomplish in the game. And to me, that was really interesting because it was very different. France were playing very compact. They were letting Belgium have the ball as much as they wanted in their half and even near the halfway line. But as soon as they made a push in, they started closing down and tried to win a quick ball and do an outlet pass out to the wing where they had fantastic speed. And even though I think, I can't remember off the top of my head what the possession statistics were, but in the beginning, I mean, France might maybe had 39%, 40% possession. Mm-hmm. But every time they went forward with the ball, they were getting a one-on-one on the wings, running into the box and making something dangerous happen. Belgium, on the other hand, also looked dangerous, but in a different way. I mean, they were passing, they were possessing, and they were trying to look for that, like, to kind of unlock the defense and make a killer through ball or cross it into Lukaku, and got close a couple times. But both teams in the beginning, I mean, in the beginning, Belgium had, you would look at it and you would think Belgium had this game by the scruff of the neck. But France did an amazing job of playing a cohesive, organized defense.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would say that the percentage was 60-40 to Belgium.
Yeah.
But France had 19 attempts on goal to Belgium's 9. And 5 on target versus 3. So,
in the end, a lot of those crosses that Belgium was putting in didn't find a mark because of the French defense just being tight, playing very well.
Yeah. Let's talk about the French defense, James. So, Matuidi, Kanté, and Pogba. And actually, Pogba was, a lot of the times, one of the deepest players on the field, which is surprising. But the three of them basically took the role, especially Matuidi and Kanté, of marking Kevin De Bruyne, who in this one was in a free role underneath of Lukaku. And it seemed like Hazard and him were kind of rotating between a left wing position and being in the center. Neither one of them staying in that position for long, but rotating with each other. And then behind them, you had Witsel and Dembele and Fellaini, James, basically three defensive midfielders, all playing deep, especially Dembele, all playing deep and just basically get the ball to De Bruyne. And that was the way they chose to attack. Really interesting game, exactly for the reason that you said, James, in that both teams had a clear idea of what they wanted to do, and they just said, our tactics versus yours.
Going into this game, I questioned why Dembele didn't get more time for Belgium. But in this game, I felt like the speed was just way too much for him, and he was giving away really silly fouls all over the place.
He had a poor game.
He was misplacing passes. Yeah, he had a very, very bad game. And, I mean, not just by his standards. I mean, he's a very good player, and mm-hmm. Normally, he'd be one of your most solid guys on the field. He must have been, I don't know, he wasn't playing the role that he would normally play, and I think he was just not on the pace of this game whatsoever, and it really hurt Belgium, especially later as France grew into the game.
Dembele, to me, normally is a player that not only does he shield the defense well and tackle well, but he also keeps the ball very well, and I thought he did really neither in this one. Probably the most disappointing match I've ever seen him have. He just didn't seem to fit in with the rest of the Belgian team, which is maybe why he hasn't been playing. I mean, Witsel seems a lot more natural, and even Fellaini seems more natural, although I don't like Fellaini as a tactical matchup in this match because I think that he's going against Kanté, Pogba, and Matuidi in the middle of the field, and I don't think he has the pace to even get near any of them. He's more likely to elbow one of them in the eye.
I think Witsel, Fellaini, and Dembele sitting deep like that was too much, especially with the way France was playing. They just got either the French players breezed past them as they were working through midfield up into second gear, or they were just bypassed going wide. I think it was it was a tactical mistake by Martinez to stuff the middle that much.
Yeah, it was. At the same time, I mean, you're going up against France. It was a game where France is going to have the edge because they have so much talent on the field. But I thought Belgium put up a good fight. It's just France executed so well. Kante especially. James, to you, who is the man of the match in this game? We'll get to the goal in a minute. But goal aside, who do you think the man of the match was in this game?
I mean, I think every time France plays, Kante does so much to enable what they're doing. And it was no different in this game where he just works tirelessly. And you honestly have to do that in a midfield where you're carrying Pogba because he's not going to put in that work.
Normally.
He did a little bit more this time.
He did a lot in this game.
It was a little strange because it was strange for that reason, but I also didn't expect to see Matuidi the one who was pushing furthest forward from that midfield. But, I mean, I think in general, and I usually will pick Kante to be my man of the match for France just because all of the work he does that enables everything that they do, winning the ball back in midfield to make that outlet pass out wide or to shovel it off to Pogba so he can play a through ball. I think it's Kante.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he's a huge part in Kevin De Bruyne getting strangled in this game. Not getting the service, not getting the ball, and when he does get the ball, not being able to put in his perfect crosses and his perfect through balls. Just choking out Kevin De Bruyne was the game plan. And when you have Kante, who in my mind is the best defensive midfielder in the world, the best intercepting midfielder in the world, and you have Matuidi, who is an excellent defensive midfielder who can get forward. And Pogba in this one, honestly, to me, I think he's a bad marker. I think he's a bad marker on free kicks, and I think he's a bad marker in the run of play. And I think that he was on Kompany on one of the early set pieces, James.
Oh, it just didn't mark him.
And I thought it was going to be a goal. If they're going to match up Kompany, who is an excellent header and is a brave header, as well as a man who can lose his marker, and Pogba, who can get himself lost walking in the park. I mean, I think that was a big mismatch to me, and I thought that would end up in a goal. Besides that, though, Pogba had probably the best defensive game I have seen from him, and I've watched a lot of his matches, James.
Yeah,
he's playing deep.
It's a low bar,
a lot
but
of tackles.
It was a low bar, but he did well. I mean, I won't take that away from him.
You did take it away.
No,
from
I'm
him.
Just saying it's a low bar. He did well, but I mean, the best defensive game you've seen from him. Yeah, okay. No, but he did. He had a good game. He had a good game.
The best game I saw from him was when he beat Manchester City 2-1.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's okay. If you want to sign players just so they score goals against City, that's fine.
Yeah, it's a real Manchester City thing to do in, like, 2004, you know? Anyway, Pogba with an excellent defensive game, very disciplined game, James, that Mourinho commented on after the match, because I think he's doing commentary for BBC or somebody, and he was saying how disciplined Pogba was in this one. I'm sure he wishes that
Pogba sure he had a discipline. Like he had a discipline boner watching this game from Pogba. I'm sure he was sat back, shirt half unbuttoned.
Okay.
No, I'll be very surprised to see if Pogba replicates that kind of performance at any time in any game in the Premier League. But great performance from him.
It's interesting you say that because I think that in order for France to really dominate Croatia, I think that he will have to play a similar role. Kante will be sitting on Modric, or the three of them, Matuidi, Kante, and Pogba, will be rotating around Modric and shutting Modric down. So I think it'll be a similar role, and they'll be putting the ball forward to Griezmann and Giroud and Mbappe. I have to ask you, you know, we talked a lot about players that have been misfiring in this tournament, James, and some players that I believe have had good tournaments while not necessarily putting up statistics. Like, I think Sterling's been fine, honestly, and I don't think Gabriel Jesus has been. You disagree there, but let's talk about Olivier Giroud. Let's talk about Olivier Giroud. James, he has one assist on the tournament, zero goals. How do you feel like Giroud has done in this tournament and then in this game?
This game, I think he could have done a lot better. But watching him, statistics-wise, I agree. One assist, he should have done better, I think. But he definitely passes the eye test when he's playing. So I'm kind of conflicted with how I feel about him. Sometimes I watch him play and I think that is a complete forward. And he's winning the ball in the air. He's bringing other people in the play. He's dangerous in the attack. He'll bring out an acrobatic shot every once in a while. And it just seems like, oh, it's like, okay, he's got it all. Other times I watch him and he's still trying to do those same things, but they all end up being completely ineffective. In this one, if I remember, there was a play where he was on the end of a low cross into the box, and I think a different striker or a more clinical striker probably just takes it first time on their right foot and slots it in the goal. He tries to he almost overthought it and kind of like half slid, half tried to put his left boot through it, and ended up with a ball that trickled out over the end line, not a danger to anybody. It didn't end up costing France, you know, as we know, but this was not his best game. Although in the tournament, I feel like he's pretty good as a focal point for this attack, especially with the pace that he has on either side of him, or all around him, really.
Yeah, it seems to me that he's a traditional target man at this point in his career, but I agree with you. I think that when you look at him and you see some of his goals and you see his build-up play, you say, this is a guy that has everything. But then when it comes down to it, I mean, watching him miss that shot, and there was another one early in the game, I think, where he put the ball like into row Z, you know, just blasted a shot way off frame. And I made the joke, like, there's the Arsenal striker in him, you know, like that's what an Arsenal striker would do. And the same thing when the cross came in, not being able to make that decision. And maybe that's just you think it's a composure thing, or do you think it's an instinctual thing?
I mean, I think when he doesn't take the time to think, when he plays on instinct, he seems to play a lot better. I feel like he was maybe in his head a little bit too much in this game, overthought things. And I mean, it's a big game too. Maybe the pressure got to him a little bit. He's certainly not used to getting very far in big tournaments with Arsenal. So,
good Arsenal shot there. So, France does get the goal off a corner kick. James, Alexi Lalas says that set pieces are important.
Well, sure. I mean, and they were important to England.
I'm sorry. He keeps saying it over and over again like it's this profound statement.
Set pieces are important.
Yeah, he keeps saying it like, I just keep saying it. Set pieces. Like, set pieces have always been important.
Yeah, no one ever said they weren't. No one ever claimed they weren't important. As I've said before, I've trained my brain to mute Alexi Lalas's voice, so I haven't heard him say anything in this tournament, which has been amazing. But they are important, and it was interesting, this set piece, because it was scored by Umtiti, who had been a little bit suspect defensively in this game and in this tournament, but leading up to this goal, he made a couple of whiffs on clearances that, I mean, had Lukaku been able to anticipate that he would have whiffed there. Lukaku has a free shot on goal in one of the later chances, so it was a little bit of redemption for him in that moment. But not coming off the best season for him at Barcelona either. Second half of that season, he was very error prone. Definitely did his confidence a lot of good. And from there, France could just sit back deep like they had been. They just even sit back deeper and just play off the counter.
Yeah, it's so effective too. When you have Conte and Matuidi feeding Mbappe and Griezmann, I mean, there's probably not a better set of players to run a counterattack, right? I mean, Mbappe alone, if you just have Mbappe and they play him wide.
His speed is unreal. It is unreal.
Yeah, he's his strength and size too. In addition to confidence on the ball where he's trying things. I mean, he did a little heel flick in this one that nearly ended up being a goal. But, I mean, Mbappe is terrifying right now. And I think that, honestly, I think that the World Cup final against Croatia, I think that it's going to be Mbappe. It's going to be his show. I think the matchup of him against that back line, you know, a lot of people are talking about Vida playing so well against England. Well, Harry Kane is one kind of striker and Mbappe is the other.
Well, and not only are you going to be, you know, dealing with an isolated, and you're not going to be dealing with an isolated Mbappe like you're dealing with an isolated Kane. You're going to have to worry about Griezmann. You're going to have to worry about, you know, maybe Dembele. It's going to be tough. And up to this point, I think this tournament has come down a lot to which defense decides to to not make the worst mistake in a game. And France showed that they can play a solid defensive game, as they did against Belgium. And Croatia showed that they can play a solid defensive game. And Vida showed that he can step up against England. So I think we're shaping up for what's going to be a pretty amazing final.
I think so, too. It looks like France will probably be 2-1 favorites against Croatia. Pretty heavy favorites here. Just touching on Umtiti real quick, I really haven't rated him ever since the report came out where a few people were saying that he's the best defender in the world. And then he was promptly ripped apart by, Roma in the Champions League.
He did have, he had a great first half of the season at Barcelona, and he looked the business. But he really had a terrible second half of that same season.
And I think that you were talking about his suspect clearances. Like, Kyle Walker had one today, too. But these balls come in and these guys swing and, like, it hits off their shin guard. And that's why Augie has had such a good tournament. Dude's doing stuff like that.
We see that. I see that in my Sunday league. I was like, I can clear the ball. I can clear the ball like that. Yeah, I could do that.
I want to touch on one more thing in this match here. To me, the story is the strangulation by France, and as they're trying to kill off a game, another vital part of winning World Cup tournament games, they brought on Nzonzi and Tolisso, two more defensive midfielders, James, and there was like nothing Belgium could do after that.
Talented defensive midfielders as well. Nzonzi, he could be making a case to start a game. I mean, these are good players they're bringing off the bench, and they have focused roles.
Yes.
Definitely great subs to bring on.
Focused, defined roles. And at the same time, if they need a goal, they have Dembele to come off the bench, Fekir to come off the bench, even Lamar, although he hasn't really played that well for France. I mean, they're just so deep, man. I think that they're the complete team, and I think that they're going to win the World Cup.
If you just look player by player at this French team, I think even pulling in all the teams that have been eliminated up to this point, I think they probably have the most talent position by position of any team in the tournament, and they absolutely deserve to be in the final. I'm not going to discount Croatia like, the English media would like to. They have players, plenty of talented players beyond Luka Modric and Rakitic, and all of them are great in their own right as well, but you just look at France and you're blown away by the lineup that they can put out.
Yeah, I have one more question for you on the France lineup here. Do you think Didier Deschamps is more or less French than a thin pencil mustache and a beret?
Less, but only because he could have a thin pencil mustache and a beret, and he doesn't. So,
he's super French.
I mean, he's an icon, and he's gotten criticisms for the way he plays, the way he sets his teams up, and the kind of defense first approach that they have a lot of the time. But I think he finally has the attacking players that can fit that system and exploit teams that move forward into their deep defense. And you just spring that trap, and Mbappe's gone, Dembele's gone, Griezmann's gone. They can all beat any player for speed, and just, they're not just running straight at the goal. I mean, they're creating, they're crossing, they're passing. It's a scary team.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, that he has their buy-in to play in that style. You know what I mean? I know Griezmann made a comment about how it was very similar to playing for Atletico Madrid, which is a team in La Liga that finishes third or second, depending on the year, and occasionally first. But they do so in the opposite way of Barcelona and Real Madrid, where they play a really tight defensive system. It's like a 4-4-2, and it's not glamorous.
Not sexy.
It beats a 1-0. No, yeah. And Griezmann was comparing these tactics to that, and I think that's fair. But when you have the strength of your team is in the center of your midfield, it's hard to pick a strength of this team. But
they're,
I would say that
Kante, yeah.
Kante, Matuidi, and Pogba, just they are all three so well balanced. And whereas Matuidi is a little more defensive, Pogba's a little more offensive, and Kante can do all defensively. And I think they complement each other so well. The mix is so much better than it was in the Euros. I thought they utilized them very poorly, especially Pogba, or more especially Kante, because Pogba took Kante's role, and that was the wrong role for him, and Kante was on the bench in that Euro final. So
yeah, that was that weird time when everyone thought that Pogba could play strict DM.
defensive mid, and that's just
not a thing.
We've thrown that theory in the trash.
Not a thing. Although he did play well in this match, he came forward a little bit, but you know his strengths are holding up the ball, winning tackles, dribbling, distributing, but not so much marking people or being tactically sensible. You know what I mean? And that's a big part of defending.
It really is like watching Yaya Toure in his prime when he's on his game. And that's a very high compliment.
Yeah, sure. Like loping a little bit. Yeah, that's a good compliment. It's a good compliment. I think Yaya Toure, a little better finishing. I think Pogba takes more speculative shots, but I think it's a good comp. It's a good comp. Pogba a little better and a little fancier with his dribbling and maybe holding guys up. But in this match coming up, James, real quick, Croatia or France?
France.
Do you think this is going to live up to the rest of this tournament? Do you think we get a 2-1 thriller in extra time, or are you worried that it's going to be like 3-0?
I don't think it's going to be a blowout at all. I think it's going to be close. I think both teams are going to have to feel each other out in the beginning, but I think France edges it just because of the talent that and the completeness of their team.
I agree. I am worried, though, that I think that France might blow out Croatia. I just think Croatia's played so many minutes, dude.
They've got to be tired. I mean, you saw in this game Modric, you could just tell he was exhausted and he would give the ball away or he'd mm-hmm. make a tackle, but it would bounce back to an English player. And there were a couple times where he literally just fell back onto the ground and like looked like he just wanted to, curl up and fall asleep.
Yeah,
pull up a little blankie over the side and just take a nap right there in the half field.
I thought it was very interesting that they took him off in the 119th minute because if England had scored, he's their penalty kick taker, right? I mean, he's their best one. And I think that was really indicative of how little he had left in the tank.
Yeah.
Final will be played on Sunday, so they have a few days to rest. But when you're talking about the amount of matches, the intensity of the matches that they've played in, the minutes that this Croatian team has played –
yeah,
I really worry about that.
I mean, it's a day less than France gets to rest. I mean, that's a very real concern.
It is. If you were to quantify that, you could say that, there's 8-10% recovery time there that they're not getting. It really is that significant. And I think that the heavy legs combined with the speed of Mbappe and energy of Mbappe, he's 19 years old, it makes a difference to have that kind of exuberance. Griezmann as well, and I think that will be the difference. And I really, really want this game to be close, but I'm afraid it's going to be 2-3-0.
Put those Croatian players in the hibernation pods. Wake them up on Sunday. That's it. Rest
up. That's a great idea. Well, all right, James. We had to let Dr. Pete go and take care of something, but I will say goodbye for Dr. Pete as well. I'm assuming that Dr. Pete will agree with us on France, but honestly, James, I don't care. Is that me?
No, that's fine.
No, I'm just kidding. Dr. Pete would be picking France as well. We just want this to end as well as it's been.
It's going
to
be a great game. And Croatia is going to go out there and fight like they have in every single round of this tournament. They have fought and scrapped their way through extra time and penalty kicks to get here. They're not going to just roll over and die. It's going to be a game. I'm picking France because I got to pick one team or the other, and France has weapons. Croatia has weapons too. I just think on the day, France is going to be too much.
Yeah, I'd love to see Croatia win this one. I'd love a new winner. I think that'd be so awesome, especially the way Croatia has played in this tournament. And the way they've beaten teams in extra time, in penalty kicks, all manners of ways. They've blown teams out, and they just played really well and well-rounded football all around. But, James, the last thing I'm going to ask you, I promise.
Mm-hmm.
England versus Belgium. Who you got?
Belgium.
Third place. Belgium?
Assuming, I mean, this could be just like the last game of their group stage where they don't play any of their players.
I think that most of their team will play. I think it means a lot to both nations, and I think it'll be more cagey than third place games we've seen in the past, because I think these guys both really care about finishing third, and I think Belgium will win as well.
Yeah, I think Belgium has too much for England.
Yeah, so. All right, for James Lewis and Dr. Pete, I am Tom Miller saying I hope everybody has an awesome week, and it's almost over. I'm going to have the worst withdrawal, James. I say this every episode, but it's almost over, and then we have to go on to watch the MLS,
just,
I guess.
Just hydrate. The important part is to hydrate. Electrolytes. We'll get through
it. We'll hydrate. All right, everybody. Have an awesome week.